The crowd is electric. There's a real air of anticipation today. And here it comes, our midfield general, the new Hyundai Tucson Go Edition SUV, proving that it's equipped to deal with anything. Packed with extra kit, including sat-nav with live traffic updates to help you stay on the ball, plus our ever-present 5-year unlimited mileage warranty to keep you match fit. But football fan or not, with Hyundai you can all make the most of our World Cup Tucson Go Edition. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Warranty T's and C's apply.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
and welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. What's going on, bro? How you doing? Are you there, Gabriel? Can you hear me now, Gabriel? Are we in? Are we patched in here?
How about now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah. So let's try this all over again. Welcome back to another edition.
It's all right.
I know. You know, we're rusty big time here, man. It's been a minute since we've been live on the air. I mean, even to the point where, dude, I haven't used my laptop in such a long time that I can't even log into my computer right now. I'm literally sitting here waiting to get on here. So if I sound a little funky, it's because I'm doing it through my phone at the moment. But so let's just try this all over again. Welcome to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel, how you been, bro?
I've been great, man. Just been chilling. Actually, I've been kind of busy at work. I'm getting ready to start rehearsals in about a week here and prepping a couple other auditions and just, you know, doing that actor thing and taking a little break after 9 years of the next round, and just kind of enjoying that, a little bit of getting my Mondays back. So, you know, it's been good, man. I'm, doing another thing. Like next week, I'm performing for kids in like secondary school, you know, like,
Right on.
I don't want to like shame them. It's not like youth authority or anything, but a kind of like continuation school, you know, the kids are a little bit troubled with their education and trying to get on track. And what we do is they pair up a couple actors with a student, and the kid writes a one-act play. We kind of help them find their creative voice, get them more excited about school. So doing that next week. So I've got a lot going on. Like, you know, not having the next round around, it's kind of freed up my mind and freed up time to do other things. But it sure is nice to be back on a Thursday here with you, dude.
You know, I mean, I've gotten so many emails because, you know, obviously I've been in my hiatus. I always say I'm going to come back, and then I do for a short minute, and I disappear, and – you know, and I love the fans that have been followers for Leaving the Ring for what? I mean, 10 years maybe? And, God, it's been that long. That's the crazy part, is that we've been doing this for that long. And I always respond back and said, man, I'm going to come back. It's just, you know, I own a business, and it's really hard to have a family and then have a business and then try to get everything organized so that we could do this show. I mean, I completely forgot how hard it is to get a show going. And just to let folks in a little in on what's going to be happening today is right now we're actually feeling each other out again because we haven't done this in such a long time. But we got Lou DiBella scheduled to come on in a short bit, so he should be calling in. And obviously he's going to talk about the disappointment of his fighter, Derevchenko, not getting the fight with Gennady Golovkin. And then we're going to go into the Canelo six-month suspension, which Evan Rakowski from his podcast here on Leaving the Ring is going to be joining us. And then we'll talk a little bit about Adrian Broner, his feud with Ellerby. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to check that out. That was something else.
can you hear me through these headphones? Yeah,
I definitely can. Yeah. I mean, I loved it. I know folks, you know, a lot of people are like,
thing.
You know,
I watched the whole
Adrian Broner. What was that?
Oh, I just love the whole thing. Like when Vargas is talking, yeah. And all of a sudden, I was like, where's that music coming from? And it's coming from AB's headphones. Like the whole time, like the whole press conference is going, and he's just sitting there grooving to his music. You almost get a sense that like he seems so relaxed, and just the way he talked to Ellerbe was pretty ruthless. You got the sense that when it was time for him to say, hey, you know, do you know how, when they asked him, do you know how important this is to your career? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And he kind of dropped all the stuff he was doing and focused in and was like, I absolutely know how important this is to my career. You know, it's make or break time for him. So, but I loved his whole attitude, just the way he was kind of moving and doing his own thing and kind of against, you know, kind of stacking the chips against himself. Like some guys need that, even if it's imagined to have a room full of enemies. Some guys need that to be motivated to be as sharp as they need to be. And Jesse Vargas looks like he came to win too. He seemed pretty animated, excited by the whole thing.
Right.
And he had gloves on.
Exactly. And, you know, the look that Jesse Vargas had on his face was basically, I can't wait to land my right hand on this guy. I just can't wait to see how he reacts to my punch. Because, you know, Adrian Broner is Broner. You know, whether you like him or you hate him, you expect exactly what he's going to give you. And just to let you know, Gabriel, Lou just texted right now. He's on the, what is it? 631 area code. So whenever you get a chance, go ahead and
patch
him in.
If you want to do it, let's do it.
Just patch him on in right now.
All right. Boom. Lou DiBella, you are live on Leave It in the Ring. Lou, are you there? He might be
on
mute.
Lou.
Oh. Oh, just my luck. 2631s in the switchboard. There you are. Hey, Lou, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
So you guys, at least you guys didn't have to sit in the middle of the dais on that press conference today.
Hey, Lou, let me ask you this, because I was looking at your face. I mean, how many times did you just want to burst in laughter when this was going on?
I mean, it was silly, man. There was a lot of silliness. But look, I mean, you know, it's so bizarre. And the reason Broner keeps getting more chances and people keep buying tickets and he has this huge social media following is it's sort of like, you know, you never know what to expect, and he's his own personal soap opera. I mean, it's like compelling television, quote unquote. But I agree with what one of you just said, because I was on hold when you said that, you know, when it came to though, when asked about, you know, how serious this is for his career, I think he does know. He does know. But look, this is, he's got Kevin Cunningham now with him. I think Vargas is a big volume puncher, not a huge puncher in terms of knockout power, but a big volume puncher and a big kid and hungry and confident. You know, there's only so many times, even if you're compelling, that people will buy you if you don't win. And Adrian, with his popularity, doesn't have to win every fight, but I actually think that if you want to talk about a crossroads fight, I think Broner's got to win this fight, you know?
You know, the thing with Vargas, I got to disagree with you about his power. I mean, I actually think he has the power to hurt anybody that stands a little too long in front of him. And seeing Broner, and the way Broner fights nowadays, he tends to stay in the pocket too long. This is a great opportunity for Jesse Vargas to see.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I mean, I just don't think he's not an overwhelming puncher. He's a volume puncher. You know what, though? You've already seen it in Broner fights. Broner has been susceptible to volume punchers. And, you know, Vargas is a volume puncher. The kid's very fresh. You know, he's, like, confident. He's a bigger kid. You know, this is it's a real interesting fight, actually. But meanwhile, beef seems to be the topic of the moment in boxing, and so we went from like tainted beef to a lot of beefs, you know.
That's funny. Don't test my beef. I'm going to come back positive. Speaking of the positives, I'm curious. Do you know if Vada is testing this fight or any of the fights on the card?
On what fights?
The fights this weekend, that the Broner card.
Oh, I mean, is New York testing, you mean? Or is Vada testing these?
Yeah, is there any third party or USADA, anybody?
I mean, only to the extent that these guys are in the clean boxing program, and then New York State's testing this week. You know, their week of testing.
Gotcha.
To my understanding.
Yeah, because I looked at USADA's website, and they say that Broner's been tested 5 times in the first quarter. So I'm wondering if that's part of this deal or not. But I guess I'll just keep digging. Dave, did you want to go into the mandatory? I imagine you wanted to ask
about
that.
Let's go into the mandatory. Yeah, I think that's where everybody's tuning in, is they hear your thoughts, Lou, about the decision of Gennady Golovkin moving forward with Vons Modryosyan instead of your guy.
I mean, like, I can't really fault him for that decision. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you're about to make a shitload of money to fight a guy you beat once and that you're really jacked up to beat again. And then that guy blows a drug test and everyone starts declaring them, you know, he's cleared before there's ever a hearing. And then the guy ultimately gets suspended and you go from a multi-million dollar night to a night that's going to be, you know, probably one of the lower purses he's made in recent years. And, you know, in that circumstance, do you want to fight my guy, who's probably the toughest, you know, as tough a guy as you can fight out there right now, without a giant reward? So, you know, I understand why he wants to get basically in what he views as almost like a glorified exhibition. You know, he has a huge money fight after this dude gets off his suspension.
Right.
I mean,
it's a pretty smart business move, right? I agreed with everybody.
You just can't have it both ways. Here's the thing. There's nothing. I'm not faulting them for doing that. But at the same time,
right.
You can't have it both ways. So if you don't want to take the risk and you don't want to fight my guy's got to earn a living. He's earned the right to be where he is. And you can't ask someone to step aside. See, people are getting confused. The issue on stepping aside for Vadas, that's not the issue. Like, we don't care. I mean, we have enough respect for Golovkin. He didn't cause this situation. I mean,
right.
Like, I don't love the fight. I don't really give a shit about the fight, and I probably won't even watch it if I have something better to do. But that being said, I mean, I he didn't do anything wrong. It's the other guy that did something wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. So I don't have any, you know. So if he wanted to walk into the ring as champion and then, you know, start negotiations that Monday to fight Derevyanchenko next, then there'd be no issue. But if he wants to basically make my guy wait another 6 months when because the guy broke the rules and tested positive, no. Like that, you know, you can't have it both ways. If you're going to go for the money, then that belt goes away, and that's just a conscious decision you have to make.
So as it stands, you know, they won't. The IBF has decided that they won't strip him for this fight.
I don't think that they've sent in the paperwork yet for an exception. I imagine they're going to. But the point I'm making is like it's really never been about. Like, I mean, we're not sitting there running around with legal documents trying to make sure he can't fight on May 5th. It's not about that. It's what happens the next day. I mean, and basically, why does he need the belt on May 5th if he's going to not fight, if he's going to give it up afterward anyway? But if he wants to walk into the ring with the belt on May 5th, that's not the issue. The issue is what happens next. And if he's not fighting Sergey next, then you know, Sergey wants the title vacated so he can get into the mix and fight a fight that's going to earn him money. He's got a wife and 2 kids, and he's earned the opportunity. He's a deserving mandatory. How unusual. This is why mandatories are created, so guys like him can force the issue and make a living.
Right. Well, I think you said it a long time ago. The phrase has been truncated and kind of co-opted, but I think you said on this show the belts matter until they don't.
Right, and they do.
You know, do you think this situation, and because anti-doping is so new on the landscape, you know, kind of going back to what, 2000, but really becoming more pervasive since 2010 with Floyd Mayweather doing USADA testing, do you think it's time that the sanctioning bodies take a look at this kind of exception?
I mean, I don't even, I got to be honest with you, I don't even know that the sanctioning body should be in the middle of the testing. I mean, if you want to know the truth, part of the problem right now is like, I mean, guys, I mean, look, I love the WBC and Mauricio for taking the initiative. At the same time, no matter how much they like a guy or believe in a guy, you have to, like, you know, sort of maintain adherence to your own sort of standards. And like, right now, part, like, you know, most of these organizations, one of the things I've always admired about the IBF, and look, it was created, frankly, out of an era where there was trouble, and the IBF, you know, went into receivership and really had to go move toward adhering to its own rules. But the IBF does adhere to its own rules, whereas, you know, it seems that a lot of people sometimes make up their own rules or change them or adapt them. And you know, right now, look, the state of – I mean, the total testing is BS right now to begin with. The fighters themselves are the ones signing up for it and then, you know – and doing, you know, really, and then also who's determining when it starts? I mean, you know that there's huge differences between, you know, starting 4 weeks before a fight and starting, you know, when a fight is first signed. And you know,
just look at this case. I mean, it was the first time he was tested in Mexico, and it apparently happened sooner than normal, you know. And just looking at the USADA website, Broner has been tested 8 times in the first 2 quarters of the year, but Vargas hasn't been tested at all. That's not a testing program.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about not having a testing program. Canelo Alvarez was ordered – the BC put Canelo – inserted Canelo into their mandatory position and dictated that there should be an immediate rematch. And, you know, the BC is the one that has the more evolved program in terms of, you know, testing for performance-enhancing drugs and demanding that WBC fighters, in order to fight for the BC and get ranked, be part of their clean boxing program. And I don't know if it changed in the last couple of weeks, but I don't recall Canelo being part of that program.
No, he's not.
Well, how could that be? I mean, how can that be? Except this is boxing. This is boxing.
Right.
But otherwise, how could that be? How could that be?
Right.
Their explanation was that because their explanation for it was, well, because he's already in BOTA testing, which makes no sense regardless.
He's not part of the clean boxing program.
Right.
Period. I mean, I have loads of emails requiring me to have all my guys, you know, sign up and be part of the clean boxing program. You know, he's not part of the clean boxing program. How's that? You know? It just
right.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but it does make sense. I mean, this fight is hypocrisy heaven. You know, we've had people defend Triple G as a guy that doesn't care about money, only cares about the fans. You know, he should care about money.
It's a frigging business, man. Like, what the fuck? I mean, like, look, most of these guys are going in there. And let me tell you something. If Triple G keeps taking punches, you know, with greater frequency like he has, you know, in recent fights, and he continues fighting well into his future, he's going to wind up paying a price, too, later. Because if you think that football is the only sport that has concussion issues, no one's paying attention. So, I mean, this is a business. This is a business. So he's making a business decision. But you know what? He has to respect other people's business decisions and rights also. So here's like what I would say. You know, I would lay this on Triple G and Tom. If you said, okay, guys, Triple G wants to walk in the ring May 5th and he wants to do this fight, he wants to walk in with the belt, you know, if they say that's fine. If they say they're going to fight us next, then that's cool. And, you know, we'll start negotiations on May 7th. If we know that they're fighting on September 15th against Canelo. If that's what they're doing, they also know Canelo was suspended. He didn't hurt himself. He was suspended. So, like, then just say, okay, fine. We want the exception for this fight, and we're going to vacate after this fight. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Right. Right.
Let me ask you this, just to wrap up with it, because I'd heard this thrown out. what was your recourse here? I mean, you could, you know, petition the IBF, but could you have said, look, I'll throw up X amount of dollars, let's do a co-promotion? Or is the mandatory, you know, are you obligated to act a certain way, and the lead promoter, you know, that has the mandatory obligation, are they financially obligated a certain way? Can you
No,
explain that?
If Tom had something to offer, you know, that was for a plan for Derevyanchenko that involved the winners or involved certain, if he had a plan, we would have been able to listen to it. But the IBF doesn't allow step-aside money. So, like, the IBF is one of the few organizations that doesn't allow step-aside money generally. It's not in, it's not something that's permissible in the IBF. Now, that being said, you know, no one ever said, hey, do you want to fight on the undercard May 5th? No one ever offered that, even though, you know, no one ever, that never came
no,
up.
I meant, you know, if you wanted it to be Triple G Derevyanchenko this May 5th, could you have made an offer and said, I'll throw in a couple million into the pot or that, you know, let's make it a co-promotion. Was that a viable option?
I mean, no, it wasn't an option really, because I don't think that under any circumstances, Tom and Gennady and Abel were going to decide to fight Derevyanchenko on May 5th.
Were there even a phone call to you, Lou?
No, I mean, there was never a discussion. There was never an offer made for a fight. There was never an offer made for a fight. And it was. And look, this is one of the reasons why I'm not upset with Tom. And I'm not. I mean, there wasn't a lot of BS. You know, it was clear. It just like we don't want to fight. You know, right now,
yeah.
In this situation, we don't want to fight Derevyanchenko. And
you think what Chris Mannix is throwing out there, calling Triple G, saying that Triple G is ducking your guy? Do you think that's accurate or? Like, because you said a little while back, and I...
Well, I mean, is it accurate? I don't think... It depends on... Look, people are writing things in 140 characters. So, is it accurate? I mean, it's accurate on one hand, but it's totally rational and explicable. I mean, yes, he's ducking the risk when he has a giant fight out there, and the mandatory is a motherfucker that he knows for years and years from when they were both amateurs, and you know, they, you know, believe me, Triple G knows fighters from Eastern Europe, and Derevyanchenko was an amateur beast, and he's pretty much a beast as a pro. He's a tough out for any champion or anybody at the top echelon at middleweight. He's not a guy that when your purse goes down tenfold, you want to see across the ring from you. So, I mean, he's ducking the situation, but do I blame him? No. Does it make him a bad guy? No. Does it make him less a champion? No. Am I mad at him? No. Do I think it's irrational? No. Would I do the same thing if I was Tom? Yes, probably. But I'd also acknowledge that, you know, there are sacrifices with decisions, and one of them is not going to have every belt.
Absolutely.
Let's jump over to the big fight that everybody wants to talk about with the biggest humans in the world. Deontay Wilder, your guy, versus Anthony Joshua. What's the latest with that? What do you know?
I mean, there's no latest. I mean, there's Eddie threw out an offer that he made public before, you know, contemporaneously with its receipt. And I didn't really take it much seriously as an offer. I don't think Eddie threw it out with the intention that it was going to be accepted or as a real good faith, like here, like let's try to get a deal done kind of offer. But I've said the same thing consistently, and I guess I don't want to, this like topic is starting to irritate me, and it's no fault of yours, but it's starting to irritate me because here's the reality. The fight will happen when everybody involved really wants to make it. And that includes Eddie and Team Joshua. And, you know, when everyone really wants to make a deal, it's not going to be social media bantering that's going to make a deal. And it's not going to be someone buying out another. You know, it's not how this kind of deal is going to work. I mean, you know, in the long run. And it's going to happen through a discussion of, okay, here's how we're going to handle A, B, C, D, and E, you know, revenue streams. And here's how we're going to cut a deal that's fair and reflects the value of both guys, and you sit there and you do a deal that ultimately, like, neither one of you is thrilled with, but you both feel like you made a fair deal. That's how a deal gets done. They don't happen through social media warfare. So it'll happen when it's going to happen, and it's not going to be a Mayweather-Pacquiao kind of weight, because no one's that crazy. With the heavyweights and with guys like this, you know, every fight is an adventure. You know, just ask... you know, Joshua and his last fight, and frankly, ask Deontay too, who, you know, had to recover from being really badly hurt to knock out,
Ortiz.
Ortiz, yeah. So, you know, like, I mean, you sit there and you wait something out too long, and you wind up killing it because something, external thing comes in, and oh my God, all of a sudden this mega fight's not there any longer. So, I mean, this will happen, and it'll happen in due course. It'll just happen when everybody's really ready to sit down and get it done.
Yeah, and I almost get the sense that when you guys go silent on it, that's when it'll get announced, not when you're talking deal points and take it or leave it. When I heard take it or leave it, you know, that just says you don't want the fight right now. It just seems pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, I think you don't even have to say anything. I mean, like, if you're just following and reading what's going on out there, it's almost self-evident. You know, and you know, that being said, I think the fight will build for a little bit while longer, and then there'll be enough money there to satisfy Joshua and everybody else there that it makes sense. And in the meantime, Joshua will probably get a payday or two, and that's my guess that then it'll happen. I mean, if they really want to make a fight right now, I think you're right. I think you're not going to hear anything, and then you're going to wake up and go, oh my God, they made the fight. You know, because I think it's a lot more likely to happen that way. When you're already positioning the press in the negotiation process, you already know where it's ending. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're right. Sitting there and you're involving the press. If you're doing that, you're not. That's not what you do when you try to make a deal. You know.
Yeah. No. Fair enough. Just lastly, you wanted to talk about the card this weekend at the Barclays Center. How's it doing? Besides the marquee matchups, is there anybody on the card that we should know about for the future?
There are some good prospects on the card, and of course I don't have my bout sheet in front of me, but well, look, I mean, you have Rashi Warren on the card, who's not a prospect, but you know, a really good fighter, a multiple-time world champion. He's in a competitive kind of match on the card. Heather Hardy coming off two Bellator fights in a row, coming back to boxing, and she's fighting a 12-2 woman who can actually fight, and it should be a good scrap. And there's Richardson Hitchens, who Mayweather Promotions has, but kid was a really good amateur in New York. He's a good prospect. George Arias, undefeated heavyweight. I have kid is really skilled and could fight a lot. I wish he was 6'5" and 260. He's not. He's a little heavyweight, but he's a really good little heavyweight, and he's undefeated. He's fighting on the card, and there's a lot of talent on the card.
Yeah, I'm excited about the televised bouts. I mean, I think it's going to be an action-packed night. Jesus Cuellar, Gervonta Davis, I think that's a really good fight. I think Centeno Jr., Charlo is a short fight, maybe 5-6 rounds. But Broner Vargas, I think that's anybody's fight. It's going to come down to who wants it more.
The Broner Vargas fight is a great matchup. And I've been impressed with Vargas as a person. Like, the kid carries himself really well. Well-spoken, carries himself well. He's very confident. I thought it was pretty cool when at the press conference today, I'm sure you noticed, but when Broner was like staring at him and sort of trying to get under his skin, the kid just didn't miss a beat. He just said like, "Hey, look me in the eye. You know, I'm going to beat your ass." And then, you know, he has those kind of instincts you like to see. Broner, man, like, his drawing power is like undeniable, and it continues to surprise me. Because it doesn't necessarily like correlate to his success in the ring, and you know, no BS. Like right now, we're on a path that we're going to sell out the lower bowl, which is what we set the place up for, and may very well we're going to open up the upper bowl. So like we're looking at certainly 10,000 people, and none of these three fighters that are the A sides. Or their opponents who are very strong, opponents, former world champion. Vargas is an attractive opponent, so Centeno. But none of these guys, none of the six of them are from New York. And, It's pretty amazing. It speaks to where we've got this whole Brooklyn boxing program to. You know, it speaks to the strength of a good, solid card that's stacked and has offering a lot. But it does say something about the continuing star power of Broner. People may not love him, but the people that don't love him, they want to see him, even if it's only to see him get his ass kicked, you know. But he has that kind of appeal where, you know, people find him compelling whether or not they are fans of his. And it makes him still one of the bigger draws in boxing.
Yeah, I mean, Broner's appeal, I mean, you know, Americans don't need to have their train wrecks have substance, you know. They just need them to keep being train wrecks, and he keeps doing that. So I think as long as he, you know, I think if it's a close fight but a loss for him, I think he can get another chance out of it just because he's colorful and people like that. But, you know, I'm always excited when any Charlo fights. So I'll definitely be watching. I think Davis too is a pretty exciting guy. So
The Davis Cuellar fight is likely to end in a knockout. I mean, Cuellar's frankly only chance is to hurt. I think is to hurt Gervonta, and I think he's gonna try to hurt Gervonta. And Davis is, you know, Davis is a strong, hard punching little guy with a, you know, really good, you know, offensive skills. He's got good skills across the board, so that should be an interesting fight. I think Charlo might be the hardest puncher in the middleweight division, and you know, Centeno's a pretty good kid. The problem he may have is his chin may be his Achilles heel. So, you know, can he manage to go through an entire fight with Charlo without having that chin checked? But I think that's a real interesting fight. And then I think the main event's anybody's fight, you know. Is it the young kid moving up, or is it the old guy that needs the win? You know, and he's not that old in years, Broner, but you know what? I mean, he's got miles on him, and there's only so many times in a row that you can walk into a fight where, you know, you're proclaiming that you're going to win and not do it. So he knows what's at stake. It's a really important night for Broner. I expect you'll see the best out of him, particularly with Kevin Cunningham in his corner.
Yeah,
well,
I'm excited
about
that.
Seen. Let's see what happens there. But I got to ask this question before we get you, let you go, Lou. I got to ask this. What's the deal with Al Haymon and the Barclays Center? Why is there no fight out of there? Why is it always at that same place?
Well, first of all, it's not always at that same place. I mean, Adonis Stevenson's fighting in Canada. There are shows that Errol Spence is fighting in Texas. But the Barclays Center is one of the premier venues in the country. Brooklyn right now is supporting big fights. I mean, you know, regular $1 million gates and regular crowds of 10,000 or more. And you're in New York, which is the media capital, and it's also convenient to Showtime, where a lot of those fights are happening. And there's a real dedication in terms of keeping dates and holding dates for boxing and creating a franchise out of boxing at the Barclays Center that you don't even see now out of most casinos. So they really have created a boxing program. And you know, it's not a, you know, the events that...
I mean, you know, a lot of Southern, even over here in North California, or anybody in the West, the major complaint is that they can't fly out there. Why is a Mexican fighter fighting out there if he's a draw, like a Mikey Garcia? Why is he not bringing these fighters and building them up if they're from an area like Southern California? You know, and I think that's why I'm asking. There's been a lot of
Most of the guys from Southern California, if you really look, have also fought in Southern California. But if they're drawing huge gates and they're doing well in the New York area, then, you know, like, they're better off having – well, why wouldn't they want to be fighting there and get that kind of exposure at a premier venue? I mean, you know. I mean, the truth of the matter is also is that the Barclays Center, because of the continuity of events, fighters are fighting there with some frequency. You know, my company has had nothing to do with PBC, but Ivan Baranchuk, who's about to fight for a vacant world title, became a celebrity in Oklahoma and was generating site fees every time he fought in Miami, Oklahoma, which adopted him – as, you know, its native son, that that was his hometown, and by the regularity in which he fought there. So, you know, there are a lot of fighters that have in the past made, you know, second homes away from home in cities other than the ones that they were developed in.
Well, there you go. Well, Lou, again, man, I want to thank you for coming on Leaving the Ring. We really appreciate it coming on there and answering our questions. Until again, bro.
My pleasure to be on. And by the way, take a look at the crowd when you watch, when you turn your TV on Showtime on Saturday night. Look at this crowd and listen to it and realize they all bought tickets, and that there's a kid from Maryland, a guy from Houston, and a guy from Cincinnati as the A-sides, and a South American guy and a guy from Cali, and actually, what, a guy from Nevada as a B-side. So nobody from Brooklyn in the six TV slots, but look at what that room sounds like and looks like on Saturday night.
We definitely
right.
will. Thank you.
All right, guys. Good being
with
you. All right,
man.
Bye-bye.
Happy 420.
Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Well, there you go. You had Lou DiBella come on and express his thoughts about Triple G and Team Triple G going on ahead with the Matarossian fight. And, you know, I'm glad that he was realistic about it, Gabriel. I mean, you know, he said, hey, I'm not going to fault him at all, because that's exactly probably what I would have done as well, is avoid a threat and move on and get that six figure, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. But it also, it's the thing I've talked about in the past on TNR, is that we understand Gennady is trying to build a business and a legacy, but there's a bunch of other people in the four divisions that are working towards the same goal of trying to get a belt or get all the belts. And his point's well taken. It's like the guy gets passed over here, but now he's also going to get passed over in September when they make the rematch with Canelo.
Right.
So at that point, you got to strip him. It just
can you hear me?
You know, yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure, because I finally got my computer up and working. Just wanted to make sure
yeah,
that you can hear me. Yeah.
Your vocal quality change. Yeah.
Perfect.
So that, you know, but it's something that I find funny. It's why I call it hypocrisy heaven, this fight, is because everyone's making the argument that Triple G, for this kind of money, shouldn't have to prepare for a dangerous fighter who is 12-0 with 10 knockouts. Kind of an unknown quantity at the top level, despite moving towards the mandatory spot. But they're totally fine with a 154-pounder who's like, what, 3-6 in his last six? He's won three out of his last six. And over there were razor, you know, decisions. But Vonis always loses kind of close fights, right? He always kind of does just enough to lose. That's kind of his story, is when the lights are on, like the Green fight. You know, when he got that fight, he stuck out the Giant. It was, you know, and that's kind of his MO. But so now we're totally fine with him taking this chance on a few weeks' notice, moving up to 160 from 154, where he's spent his whole career at, amateur and pro. Like, we're all fine with that. Like, that's the acceptable risk. We don't want the middleweight champion to risk it, or risk his money, which is always weird, because we hear, well, it's not your money when we're talking about Floyd or a PBC fighter. Why do you care that they're getting paid? It's not your money. But here,
I'll tell you why,
we're going to defend Triple G because he might make some money.
Right.
His big payday.
I mean, that remember back when he fought Brooke, it was you know, boxing. All of a sudden, it was boxing business. But I'll give you my reason why Matarossian is okay with me. I think it's a decent fight. It's a fight where you have a solid fighter that's going to go rounds with Triple G. And when I say that, because, see, here's the thing is, when you look in social media, you see everybody, well, he's going to knock him out. You know, he's going to just knock this guy out. Guys, slow down. I mean, Triple G is a monster guy, but he's a volume puncher. He's not one dude that just throws one punch and all of a sudden you're gone. He didn't do that with Canelo. He didn't do it with Daniel Jacobs. He's a guy that gradually works forward and gets the buildup in order to kind of steam roll over you. So, to me, Matarossian is the guy that is going to go in there, give him some rounds, and there's going to have some moments, because I don't know about you or the rest of the world that watched the first fight with Gennady Golovkin and Saul Canelo, but I saw some bit of an age there. It took him a little longer to get the wheels going. It took him a little longer to kind of trap Canelo. And I don't disagree with folks that have emailed me and said, hey, do you think there would have been if Canelo's conditioning was 100%, do you think that he could have taken more of the rounds and Triple G? Because if you watch those first four rounds, Gennady was having some problems there. And I know to the Gennady fans, the lovers of Gennady, the defenders of Gennady, they're going to say, what, are you crazy? Well, guys, I'm not biased. I'm watching the fight with both eyes, not one. Not one and the other hand covering the other. You know, so
I actually watched the fight like 2 days ago, 3 days ago now, and just you know hadn't seen it. I think maybe I watched it twice, not the other day, but you know since the fight live and then again before the next round, and then just the other day I was like, you know, I'm gonna watch this fight again and see where Gennady's at, and why is it that they're, I mean, you know, he hasn't fought in 2 years, and I would say. 6 months back, Vonis was up here doing some sparring and was just helping somebody out, but it was like as big as I'd ever seen him. Like he wasn't in great shape. He was working himself back into shape. From the pictures I've seen of him now, he looks to be in very good shape heading into this mini camp for Triple G. So, you know, maybe he had something lined up or he was waiting, you know, and just training. He's getting a nice rhythm with all the people out here with Victor's gym. His dad and Remy Korchemny, who's the track coach, get along famously. And so there's this nice ability to speak to each other and sense of family and all that. He's going to be feeling as good as he can feel on the night. But he hasn't fought in 2 years. He's a 154.
No.
I don't know. It's hard for me to say.
It's
he's always been a durable
thing.
Guy that goes rounds,
right.
But at 154.
Right. At 154.
You know?
And you know what? This is the advantage, and this is what Gennady Golovkin's team have worked up to, which is be the A side and be able to get away with certain things to secure themselves for an 8-figure payday that may or may not happen in September. And, you know, I may not like it. There's plenty of fans out there that don't like this fight. But this is boxing, and this is what happens. Your expectations cannot be too high, unfortunately. It just can't be that high. I'm thankful to Golovkin, who you know and I have met numerous times, on numerous occasions. He got the fight. Now, is he going to be a punching bag for a guy that's securing himself for this 8-figure payday? Absolutely. I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue that he may win a round or two because I don't think he is. Because, you, like, as you pointed out, 154, hasn't fought in 2 years. But he does have a durable chin. Comes to fight. He is a professional, you know.
Yeah.
But they wanted something safe. They wanted something safe.
But he's also, I mean, I don't know about you. I go to the fights to see competitive fights. I'm not here to watch the beauty of Gennady Golovkin any more than I was there to watch the beauty of Floyd Mayweather against an overmatched opponent.
Well, that's because you're an actual fight fan, though, Gabriel. Let's be fair here. Most people that tune in to watch fights tune in to watch the one person they want to watch. And if you look at the social media world, the Gennady fans have become like Manny Pacquiao fans at one time. You know, they're in love with their fighter. They got this infatuation with them, and no matter what he says and what he does, it's gold. It's gold, baby. And whatever you're saying, you know what they're going to say to you? I don't want to hear that soft shit. I don't want to hear that soft shit. Take that soft shit somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, I mean, I don't even choose to engage with guys that are not going to be open to the fact that this is a crappy fight. You know? Now, is it in the terms of Gennady Golovkin's ducking, you know, his mandatory, he's ducking a real fight. He's not ducking the opponent. He's ducking losing an 8-figure payday. I don't know anybody else that would do that. Would you? I wouldn't do that. And I know for a fact that Tom Offer and them were not that dumb. They're not in the position that they're at for making stupid decisions.
Well, and Felix Trinidad fought Winky Wright. Felix Trinidad fought Winky Wright, and he wrote him a check in the locker room for $1 million of his own dollars to make the fight happen. But bad style for him. He could have fought Mosley. He could have fought, like, you know, more advantageous style for him. But he chose to fight Winky Wright. And I've heard people, compare Golovkin. He's the closest thing to Hagler I've seen in, you know, since Hagler, forgetting about Bernard Hopkins, setting, you know, defense record in his great title reign. But when you're getting comparisons like that, we always talk about this. There are guys that want to be great, and there's everybody else. Gennady wants all the belts, and that's a very clear mission. But, you know, with a month out, they could have made a clear decision. You know, we're going to keep this date. This guy looks like he's not going to fight. And remember, you know, Greg Leone wrote about this on Boxing Talk. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. And he talked about how it was Golovkin's lawyer who sent a letter to the NAC and pointed out the strict liability rule and how, you know, this guy, whether he proves it was inadvertent or not, needs a suspension. So they canceled the fight. Golovkin's side made sure once he was positive that the fight wasn't going to happen. Well, then at that point, you got to fight your mandatory. Why can't you fight him in 4 weeks? If you're the greatest thing since Hagler, you're Mr. Mexican style, you respect boxing fans, and you're all about it, then I say, you know, fight your mandatory.
Oh, yeah. I knew that was just
not just
right.
For the guys that have the belts, but for the guys that are working their way towards getting a shot at one. Now this guy's going to have to wait till when to get his fight. It's not right. It's got to be stripped.
If you want to be
a business guy, cool. But, you know, take your medicine. Strip them.
I realize
I'm in control of the thing. I'm going on a rant while I thought you were going to the phones. You know, here I thought I wasn't going to have to work the damn switchboard anymore. 310, you're live on the next round. I'm sorry, you're live on Leave It in the Ring. Old habits die hard. Evan, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Doing good,
Dave,
man.
I'm doing good.
You know what? I ate some pizza a little earlier, so I think it's finally coming up. I'm getting at that age, man, where if I eat certain things, I'm starting to get heartburn.
Steak being one of them?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I do very well with steak, Evan. You know, there are no suspensions under my belt here. But, hey, man, well, welcome to the show. I definitely want to hear.
Thank you for having me.
You know, which your show is going to be up tomorrow. For the fans that are listening right now, the aficionados, it will be up a little late, well, evening time on Friday. And I had a chance to check out a little bit, so I'm excited to put that one up. I think the fans are going to not be disappointed with this episode that you're dropping on Friday. But we had Lula Bella on, and he said, hey, you know what? I don't fault Gennady Golovkin's team or Gennady on not wanting to get in the ring with his guy, but choosing to go for moderation to secure an 8-figure in September with Canelo Alvarez. Let me ask you, if I remember correctly, you tuned in to the conference that Nevada had and giving Canelo the 6-month suspension. What was your take and what was your thoughts about it?
Well, look, I'm critical again in this episode. I should have been more critical last episode. I think, you know, I applaud taking a stance against PEDs. Like I do. I think this is a misguided one. I think there is plausible deniability for Canelo on this, and I don't really know whether he cheated or not. But in almost any other state and in almost any other case, you can make a legal case here that he did not intend to cheat and it was out of his control. And honestly, it's like when you take a stand, you got to make sure you're buttoned up on this stuff. And I don't think they were. And look, that stuff matters. And so you're essentially delaying this. Now, the effect of it might actually make the fight bigger. I love the Jordan Brand ad that came out. I hope the animosity between
stuff.
The two. Yeah, I love
that
it.
Was great
I love
stuff.
It.
Yeah, yeah,
I,
absolutely.
I hope the fight is bigger because of it. And you know what? Lou DiBella should want his fighter to fight Gennady after this fight. If Gennady beats Canelo in September, Lou's fighter is going to make a lot more money. He just is. Like, that's fantastic for Lou. You got to wait, and maybe you got to strip the belt and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, look, make the fight as big as possible. This is what the pay-per-view market's
maybe,
about at this point. It's
maybe that's
big,
why
big fights.
Right, and maybe that's why Lou is very self-controlled in this in this late call that he had with this on Leaving the Ring, Gabriel, because at times we've had Lou, and I think Leonard, who used to be with, who still is with Leaving the Ring. Remember when he did that interview with Lenny, and he was in raw form, Lou DiBella, and it just seemed to me he seemed a little calm. I was expecting a raw Lou DiBella to come on and just kind of go off about the fact that his fighter was not getting the shot at Triple G, but he wasn't.
No way.
And I think
his fighter's
going to
have a full training camp, a full time to prepare, and his fighter's probably going to make two or three times as much money.
There you go.
I mean, if Gennady wins, and if he wins impressively, that's a pay-per-view fight. It's really,
what
I mean,
think about,
like, that's what you
what
want.
What do you think about
Bonnet,
though?
What
do you think
mean,
about this
it,
fight,
look, it's not a great fight. I mean, it's the best you can do on this kind of nose. I guess, you know, I mentioned this in the pod. The Gennady Golovkin brand, it's kind of unfortunate that through no fault of his own, he's taking a little bit of a brand hit, especially with hardcore fans, because if you're a hardcore fan, you love him due to the activity that he had. And I went into it a little bit like, you know, I kind of went into it really deep, but his brand is built on that. And he had a symbiotic relationship with HBO where he really was able to get on there a lot. I think performing in Europe helped for that. I think probably take like Tom Loeffler not bleeding HBO dry for every single fight, and him building an attendance base to fund opponents, because when you got someone like him, it's you got to overpay opponents. So he built that brand, and it's taken a little bit of a hit with this. Now, I think that's okay, because his next five opponents aren't going to equal the payday that he's going to get with Canelo, and at a certain point, you just got to say that's fine. Like, it's prize fighting, you know. You could get brain damage doing this and get the biggest paydays possible. Like that, he could probably make $25 or $30 million against Canelo. You know, how can you tell him not to do that?
Right.
I mean, could he have postponed this fight until June? Yeah, you can make an argument for that and fought one of his mandatories. You can definitely make that argument. I think there's enough of his fans, especially his hardcore fans, are hardcore. Like, they would love to see him fight on Cinco de Mayo. They're kind of like hardcore Mexican-American fan base, like, that's a hardcore boxing fan. I mean, trust me, I was in the crowd for the first fight, Golovkin-Canelo, and there's definitely this, you know, the marketing term would be sort of brand equity, but there's this like palpable thing he has going on where you feel like there's, you know, this crowd that's cheering against their own national soccer team. It's crazy. Like he did that, you know? And it's the way he fights, and it's his style, and it's everything that a hardcore fan appreciates. But in New York, if you went there, the crowd who would show up for him was just pure fight fans. It's everybody. Everybody
right.
loves the way he fights, you know? So going back to Vonis, I don't know what to make of that. It's a tough, like, Vonis has been so inactive. You can make it. It's
right.
like, it's fine. It's okay. It's fine.
But I can tell you what I can make of it. There's two things, two sides to this, I believe. One is, like, you know, obviously Team Gennady Golovkin are looking at the big payday in September, but they're looking at their fighter. They, you know, obviously they could have pushed it to June, right? You know, give the other guy more time if they were going to go after the mandatory. But instead, they have their fighter. He's juiced. He's ready. He wants to fight. Why allow him to sit it off and not get that aggression out at the time that was set and ready to go? I mean, if we go back and we look at Tito Trinidad with Bernard Hopkins, when the fight was canceled, not by their fault, but when it was canceled to a later date, You almost caught a Trinidad flat. He wasn't the Trinidad.
Yep.
Like Trinidad looked ready to go on the fight night that was scheduled. When he came back, he just wasn't that guy. And I think that's how trainers look at their fighters.
That's definitely one of the classic examples, you know. And I think the other thing is, like, people don't realize, like, if you're a boxer, you're an independent contractor, and you put a lot of money and time and effort into your training camp, and you schedule it to peak at a certain point. And you can always make adjustments, but that's really, like, that's kind of what it is. You know, it's not like very rarely, especially at this kind of a level with these kind of stakes, like, you can't really screw with that much. And so I get it. And also, like, look, if Gennady wins on May 5th and then he wins in September, I mean, who does own the two sort of quote-unquote Mexican holidays? Does he own them? I don't know at that point. That, you know, who knows? I mean, those are sort of the big two pay-per-view days.
Yep.
Yeah. I just wonder how many miles, you know, Gennady's got left in him, you know. I think he's fresher at this point than maybe Martinez was at this point.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have any nagging injuries or anything, but he's getting slower and he's getting hit more flush and more,
mm-hmm.
you know. But
mm-hmm. No, and that's even a bigger, more of an argument. I mean, it's more of an argument for him to fight Vanus and then Canelo in September, at least if you're on Gennady's team. Now, if you're just a pure fan, I understand it. I understand that you're a little bit disappointed in it. But by that logic, too, it's like you don't have too much of this left in the run. So definitely enjoy it, you know. Like,
yeah,
no one complained when he knocked out Rubio in two rounds. I mean, that, you know.
I did. I actually thought that was a shit fight, too. And I was like, why is everybody celebrating? I mean, it's a shit fight.
We used to call him the Dark Cloud, Evan, for a reason.
I respect Rubio as a fighter. I'm really fond of Vanus. Yeah, he's a really great guy. True fighter. Just really, like, pure fighter, like, mentality. Drop of a hat, he's ready to go. I respect that. But, you know, I wasn't excited about the Brook fight either. You know, everybody, all of a sudden fight fans are telling me, well, it's an event, you know. That's great, you know, like, go to a freaking concert. I want to see a fight, you know. I want to see an evenly matched fight. I want to see a guy challenged. But, you know, that's me. I got something to do that night already. Like, before they announced the Vanus fight, I already had something to do. So, you know.
So did I. I have a birthday to celebrate, you know, on Cinco de Mayo.
That's right. It's Dave's birthday. Yeah, I'm doing a live podcast. I'm guesting on a live podcast here in the city that night. So, you know, like, to me, it's just one of those, it's like, I'll catch it on the, you know, replay, you know.
Right.
HBO Now or whatever. HBO Go.
And I think everybody understands that mentality. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fine.
Right.
That's it's not can't miss television.
And it's
but,
no reason
you know,
to stop being a Gennady Golovkin fan. You know, the guy
exactly,
brings it. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's my overall point, and maybe I am a little bit biased. You know, because we worked with him and Tom real closely, but and he was fantastic to work with. But you know,
and Tom's great.
Like we did it. You know, we did the same thing with Canelo too. I mean, it, you know, I like them both. That is exactly what Vanus versus Gennady is. It's okay. Maybe we'll watch it if there's nothing else on. And otherwise, if you got something else to do, catch it on replay. You kind of know the outcome. But I think you get to September, and then if you're a Gennady fan, I think he will be active after that. And I have no inside info on that, but I think once if he beats Canelo – now if Canelo wins, I mean, Gennady's got to take a real hard look at the roadmap as to where he's going. But if Gennady wins, look, you know what's happening. He's going for all the belts. Like that's going to be – he'll overpay, I'm sure, for B.J. Saunders, and he'll overpay, you know, for Luz, Dara Vyachenko or whatever.
Right. But I think on Canelo's part, it depends on how he wins. If it's a close fight, it's a no-brainer. Canelo, do it again. It's big money.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a shutout – then Canelo's in a real pickle here because there's some real dangerous middleweights sitting to take the throne, you know?
Yeah, that's always, I think, in the back of everyone's mind.
Right.
You know, PJ Saunders is a stylistic nightmare for everyone if he brings it. Danny Jacobs, I would love to see HBO put him in against tougher opponents, and I would love to see him fight either, you know, Golovkin again or Canelo, but he might even be favored, depending on how these guys look, like he might even be favored as well, like if you're being realistic. We haven't
I'd
seen much
Danny
from Danny Jacobs
yeah.
against Gennady. Yeah, I mean, if you're being realistic. Now, we haven't. I don't think we've seen enough of him because, you know, especially in the last two fights with Golovkin, and I don't want this to come off as a criticism of Abel Sanchez. You can argue that there were tactical improvements to be made within the fight for Gennady. And so the question is, do they adjust properly to the fighter? Like, do they sort of have that Andre Ward moment where they come back and figure it out? You know, or was that a sign that he's really slipping and he can't make the adjustments, you know?
There
That's
you go.
The question.
Yeah, I watched that fight a couple days ago or 3 days ago, and he doesn't look like a guy that can make adjustments. Physically, there's like an energy that's missing from him, you know, a get up and go. When you watch him in the amateurs, or even like, you know, as a young pro, he was like almost like a Tito in that. I guess you can see this in all fighters. Like they just have more bounce early on, and he's
mm-hmm.
just slowly become more of a plotter.
Well,
know,
and I think the stylistic question is, did he do that because he's gotten into this one track mindset, or is he really capable of? Because he kind of did it against Lemieux, although I guess you could say he didn't make any in fight adjustments. He just sort of came in and showed a good box. But that's sort of like, if you're really being critical at the elite level of what he's actually doing in the ring, like that's really the big question that he's got to answer, you know?
Yeah.
And he's probably not going to answer it against Bonas, unfortunately. So
No, it's just going to be a high profile, sparring match. You know, I mean, you know, I don't want to, not give, Bonas his credit. I mean, he's a solid guy. He comes to fight. But 2 years layoff and moving up 6 pounds with one of the best middleweights out there to date, it's a lot to chew. And he's going to be chewing a lot of leather to find out whether or not he was ready on a 3-week notice to step in with the number one middleweight champion of the world.
You can be critical of the fight and the circumstances and not actually be critical of Bonas. And I think that's what we're all going out of our way to say here, because, you know, maybe under the right circumstances, Bonas could give a good fight. It's just really, this is just really tough. Like it's no one, how could you expect much of him? Like we have no idea what kind of shape he was in or anything like that.
No, we don't. I mean, this
shape,
is a big,
you know,
guessing game. Right.
Yeah. I think, like I said, he'd been up for like some sparring a while back. He might've been traveling back and forth. You know, he already seemed to be showing a six-pack in, like, one of the shots. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, he's probably in good shape, and they take good care of him over there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, he might be – I won't be surprised if you know, because Victor has talked about how he thinks that the Triple G training at altitude is actually working against him at this point, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
Maybe the first few fights it was great because it was new – shocked his body, but now it's having diminishing returns. But, you know, Abel is very close-lipped about, you see his training techniques, but, you know, I don't know if his guys supplement, like, what they do or how old school they are. Is he, you know, taking vitamins or whatnot up there to you know, get ready for and adjust for the altitude and all that, you know? That's the thing I'm kind of curious about. I know Bonas is going to be in good shape. Hopefully he was in good shape to begin with, and he'll be ready. And you know,
Bonas
adding the extra weight,
right.
Maybe he comes in at 58 and is just stronger and a little more explosive. You know, who knows? He is, you know, 5'11". He should be able to carry the weight.
Well, that and you have to love the attitude. I mean, I love any attitude where you dare to be great. You know, I'm probably one of the few boxing fans who loved watching Conor McGregor. I mean, like, I say this, And in the same moment, I basically told all of my friends at 5 or 6 to 1 odds, bet everything you have on Floyd Mayweather and probably around this round. Like, I'll script out the fight for you. But, like, I love seeing anyone dare to be great at whatever they're doing. And that's what Vonis is doing. All credit to him.
Yeah. I wish Triple G had dared to be great. But you're right. Like, the long game of it, you know. If Derevchenko, you know, if it's Canelo that wins, then, you know, it's got to wait for the third fight, or maybe they go, hey, let's fight other people and then come back to each other. I mean, for Triple G, he's got to get it now with Canelo. But Derevchenko might be in line to make some more money, you know, and he's only 12-0, 10 knockouts. He can afford maybe an interim fight, stay busy. I hope he doesn't sit around. All the number ones have to stay active.
Well,
I don't imagine.
I'm sure Lou,
you know,
Lou will get him a fight somewhere that he knows he could win, but Lou's kind of played this perfectly. He basically got his name out there, and then he pulled him back, so people, there's actually some name recognition, and then he has the leverage for the big fight when it's time to make the big fight. I mean, he's either going to get him against Canelo or Triple G based on whoever wins. You know,
they also
that's
did
fantastic.
It classy. He didn't come out of it with everybody kind of hating him, you know. Now we just are very aware of Derevchenko. You know, I got to see him work up here. The guy, he's a workhorse, man. And I think what they call him, the technician. He's just very precise. He's going to be a long night for Triple G if they ever fight.
Yeah.
He'd be great
no,
with Canelo, look, too, actually, you know.
I mean, I say this. I have yet to actually see him fight. So I don't know what he's capable of anything like that.
Yeah, he's
the
real deal.
You know, yeah. That's from all reports, it certainly sounds that way, you know.
He doesn't forget to go to the body. Triple G better remember how to, you know.
Yeah.
If he's going to – I'm sure he will at StubHub Center. We'll see. Well, so your next episode is – what is that, episode 7, dropping tomorrow night?
Dropping tomorrow night, and I think I did the sound better this time. I apologize. I wondered if people listened.
To me about
and
sound.
Then, yeah, I heard it from everyone
that
on social
evidence.
Media. I was like, okay, got it, guys. I will figure this out next time.
Right.
Yeah,
that's one thing. So. One thing about our listeners, they will catch the blemishes. I'm going to hear a lot about it for this episode. I'm going to tell you now because now my mic went down, so I had to call back in with the phone. But, hey, Evan, thanks for calling in, bro. We're going to keep moving on.
All right.
Appreciate the insight, and it was great. Thanks again.
Good stuff, guys. Thanks. All right, take care.
All right, man. Peace.
We're going to patch in right now in a short bit here. Brian Fogg, who is with Leaving the Ring, but writes for the Yuma Sun. He moved to Arizona. I don't know if you know that, Gabriel, but he moved down to Arizona. So
you know
that means more beer. Heat equals more beer.
Grandma Margie Montoya is from Yuma, Arizona. So that's very exciting.
There you go.
Hey, guys.
There you go.
How's it going tonight?
Good,
man.
Brian, how you
long time no talk.
Yeah, you said your grandma's down here, Gabe?
Yes, she was. Yeah, she's no longer with us. But, yeah, she originated in Yuma. Didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
Didn't talk about why.
Oh, really? Well, that's great. I just moved here, so I'll keep an eye out for anything too crazy.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay. You're not Mexican, so I think that might have been the thing. I don't know.
No,
but
I'm a white-looking Hispanic guy, so I never had any trouble.
Nice,
but
nice.
Yeah, I kind of wondering what you guys think of the card this weekend. I don't know. You guys see two kind of uncompetitive fights, and one that's kind of 50-50 with Broner Vargas there. I'm thinking probably Charlo probably wasn't high on Charlo until 6 months or well the last year or so, and both of them just started mowing everyone down.
I like the fight. You know what? I mean, here's the thing with Broner is when he came out, when the world boxing world took notice of Broner, he had the Mayweather Mesquite, right? Everybody's like, wow, this guy is the mirror of Floyd of now. But then he slowly the cockiness took over, which was a good thing for fight fans.
Sure.
He decided to take on more dangerous opponents, which was like Madonna, and then we got good fights out of him. And ever since then, here's a guy with a chip on his shoulder because he's kind of blaming the world around him for not getting his credit due when it's really been his own fault, you know?
Right.
And so this, to me, is a perfect opportunity for Jesse Vargas to get a KO over Broner, which I think a lot of folks have been waiting for, to see Broner get dropped again and shut down, you know? But at the same time, Broner, man, I mean, you know, there's still some pop in legs and in hand speed with Broner, so he could give Vargas some trouble here. Well, but I got to tell you, I think that if anyone should be thanking Broner and Vargas at the moment right now, should be the guy that sings 6'9" this and 6'9" that, 6'9" that on my gat and all that other crap, right? Because let's be honest, he brought the fight alive,
right?
You know, I mean, I heard of this kid about what, 6 months ago. My nephew Sean is a huge fan of Tekashi 69, and unlike most folks, they're saying his music is garbage. I have to admit here is, hey man, I bought his album. Okay.
Is this like a midlife crisis for you, man?
Dude, I'm telling you, I'm bumping it at the lot, you know, my car lot, and I'm over there listening. I'm,
oh,
you know,
man.
He ain't no Biggie, but I was like, yo, this kid kind of, you know, shoot me. But it's no surprise to see hip-hop back in the mix with boxing. And I, like I said, Jesse Vargas and Luda Bell and the rest of these guys should thank Tekashi 69 to hear a bit because he's hot right now in the market. And he put notice on this about this fight.
Right. well, Broner's really, I mean, he's kind of grown into his whole life as like a wrestling heel out there. I mean, he loves being the bad guy kind of in this. And, he doesn't – and I don't remember the last time he made a bad fight.
No.
That, Mikey Garcia, Sean Porter, yeah, he was getting kind of one-sided losses, but they were sort of fun. And you know what?
He never gave up. You never saw that's it. I'm done.
Sean Porter, he knocked him down in the 12th round, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or 11th round. So I think that'll be interesting. I do kind of expect Broner's not necessarily a big welter. I know it's at a catch weight, but he's not a big welterweight.
Right.
Physically, I know it kind of balloons. And Vargas, I mean, there could be like a 10, 12-pound weight difference between the guys when they get in there. And I'm thinking Vargas is going to look like a middleweight out there. Or at least that's what he's going to plan to do.
I want to ask you guys this. I mean, I don't know if this is a good comparison, but Broner to me is the Hector Camacho Sr. of the millennium.
Yeah.
I mean, he comes to fight. He makes it interesting by his trash talking, and he believes in it, but he never really wins these high profile fights at all.
Sure. Yeah, he's kind of that B plus, A minus contender, the back end of the top end, but he's going to be there and he's going to make fights, and people are going to watch because they hate him. That's the third part with Broner, but yeah, I'm excited for this one though. I mean, Broner comes to fight, and really Jesse, he hasn't done a whole lot lately, I guess. He had one fight since Pacquiao, and that's 2 years.
Yeah,
I think that's right. So maybe there's a little bit of ring rust from all that time off. It's tough to say. One fight I was kind of curious with you guys to what you're wondering about is the Nonito Donaire fights this weekend. As an obvious B side sort of opponent against Carl Frampton, do you think he has any chance of doing anything at all over there?
Again, here's a guy that may not be the same person anymore. He may not be the Flash.
Right.
You know, I think photographers have more Flash than the Flash at the moment. But he's a guy that comes to fight. I don't see no quit in him. So I think Frampton's going to have his hands full for a bit until he, catches rhythm and he starts to do the things that he wants to do. But I think at any chance and any opening, Donaire can take advantage of it. What do you think, Gabriel? I think Donaire has a solid chance of upsetting.
Yeah, I mean there's no real size differentials here. I mean, you know, 5'5.5" for Donaire, 5'5" for Carl Frampton. Actually, Nonito's got a 68-inch reach to Frampton's 62-inch reach. He's got more experience being successful, I think, at the top level. Frampton's been up there, but kind of, I don't know. I just don't think he ever should have lost to Santa Cruz. I don't rate that high. I know people will probably kill me for saying that, but I think Nonito, you know, he hasn't looked too bad. He had that loss to Santa Cruz. I was looking at
Walker?
Frampton's. He's actually he's had a, you know, the loss to Magdaleno, but but you know he came back with you know a 10-round decision in his last fight, Donaire, to move himself into position for this. So, you know, I think it's anyone's fight on some level. Frampton hasn't looked exactly great himself as of late. Even in winning with against Horacio Garcia, you know, he had his moments where he just didn't quite look like the same confident guy that beat Santa Cruz. So I think, I don't know. To me, it's not a gimme fight. It's kind of an underrated fight this week. I haven't really been paying much attention I haven't really been on Twitter until we announced the show today.
I think it's all up to
you. So, you know, I haven't really checked the news. But does this fight have buzz? People talking about it?
Not really. Not really.
But
no, you know
not
what?
At all. No.
Not
even Donaire bothers Twitter.
Right. Yeah, I think his wife has made more noise than him at the moment in fight week, you know. But, you know, I think with Nonito, is the thing is that what I've seen of him of late is he's – the older he's become, the more he thinks a bit too much in the ring. And he doesn't let his hands go when they should let – you know, when he should let him go. So I think that's the only way he loses this fight is if he just kind of sits back and he – kind of cocks the punches before he throws them, because you can read that, and he's been doing that a whole lot. You know, he's not the counter puncher of the old at all. He's now more of an offense fighter, and it's become pretty predictable. So it's an interesting fight. I'm not going to write him off, though. I think he can pull the upset, but I really think it depends on how Frampton comes about with his game plan.
Well, and if you look at some of the guys Nonito struggled with, I mean, Nicholas Walters, he came in looking like a welterweight. Jesse Magdaleno, he's kind of a big featherweight or a big junior. And, I mean, Rigondeaux when he was a little bit younger. So, I mean, he struggled with big guys and then a real, like, special talent. I don't know, maybe Frampton's nowhere near that, and Nonito's just a good enough athlete that he can still do something out there. Or maybe he's completely shot and we're just wasting our time. But, yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting fight for the weekend. And it doesn't seem like it's getting much hype at all, just with all the fights going on, the triple header and then the Canelo Triple G drama and Vonis and even Amir Khan this weekend too.
Oh, God, I forgot about Amir.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, I was kind of chinny on that one.
Pun intended?
I'm
back
sorry.
I'm intrigued by it. I'm curious. It's on ESPN Plus. I don't know if I kind of want to check out that platform. So you know,
I'm going to be honest with you guys. Is that I'm not going to watch any of the fights this Saturday. I'm going to DVR them,
man.
And the reason is because I'll be in Southern California. My youngest brother got us tickets for, and I don't even know how I did. I must have been high as a kite when I said yes, but I'm going to America's Got Talent. I'll be in America's Got Talent, guys. So if you see me, I'll be the guy holding the sign saying I love Sam and Cal. So that's where I'm going to be Saturday.
Dude. I'm sorry. That's just awful. I thought better of you, Dave.
I know, man. I know. You know, it's surreal because I almost got shot by a cop today, and I'm kind of hoping that he could have shot me today so I'd have to go to this thing on Saturday. But
that's fine.
Hey, Gabe, you mentioned ESPN Plus there. Have either of you guys done anything with it or made a username? It looks like we're going to have a ton of fights on there. I just don't know what to think about the app and the concept. I mean, this is probably more of Evan's alley.
Yeah.
I haven't. I kind of took a social media and like just kind of news break, you know, after leaving the next round. So, no, I haven't even pulled it into my phone. Today was like the most I wanted to talk about the fight. So, like Dave kind of got me talking about this fight, and then in the morning it was like we should do a show. So I was like, all right, but he was going to do a show anyways. He got me intrigued. You know, I could probably talk myself into why I think Ronda. Like, do you think you have to throw out the Errol Sandy Lara fights?
I think so. But, you know, here's the thing. Here's the reality. And I think this is the things that we need to point out. Triple G has he's a slow starter. He's kind of shown that, you know, that he will give rounds away. And I think that's where Vonis can take advantage. Also, we've seen Triple G not having the greatest condition in terms of there's moments where you could take advantage of him because he'll sit it out for a while. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you know, you could kind of look at that. He's sitting it out to kind of see your mistakes and where he could, you know, capitalize on. But to me, those are opportunities take advantage and capitalize on yourself. And Canelo was doing that. So
yep.
Bonds would have to kind of start fast. And to me, Bonds would have to not trap himself. He's going to have to test himself and to see whether or not he can really withstand a true 160-pounder puncher.
Does it take Triple G? You know, Vonis is a real, like, awkward dude, kind of long arm, kind of lanky, and just kind of a weird guy to fight. Does it take Triple G 4 or 5 rounds just to get the hang of that?
That's the big question. That's what I'm saying. I think that's why Vonis may make this a little bit more of a stretch of a fight than most folks are giving him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying that Vonis is going to he's going to get blown out of there. He hasn't fought in 2 years. It's going to be a murder roll for him and et cetera. You know, I mean, yes, HBO is going to have a KO reel possibly, or maybe not, but it's going to have some significant punches to reel for the upcoming September fight. But, I mean, they were not even interested in the fight until these ESPN started showing interest. Then they were like, whoa, wait a minute. Now we have money in the budget. Let's jump on this. But I think that as much as fans are undermining what Vonis can do because of the 2-year layoff and Lara, I think that Team G can be doing the same thing. They're looking ahead rather than looking in front of them, you know. And that might give opportunities for Mataroshian. Just Mataroshian to stay in the fight, I don't think to take a win, Gabriel.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you know, like I said, it depends on the Vonis that shows up, you know. Stylistically, he could be a problem, you know. He's almost like a little bit of a BJ Saunders in that he'll bounce around and move and kind of, you know, make you look for him a little bit, boxes from on high. But he's also not the biggest puncher at 154. But I think he hits hard enough to keep respect. It's not like he got, you know, he went neck and neck with Lara, who was, you know, the top of the class, you know. Although I think the Charlos really are the class of 54 and 60. You know, they just have yet to fight everybody. But,
right.
You know, we'll see.
And then for Vonis, what's the success? I mean he can make it an interesting fight. You know, if he's just a little awkward, and Triple G is slowing down over his last two fights, actually. I think we've seen that. But does he think he has any chance of winning or just making it interesting for a little bit?
No,
I'm going to say making it interesting. Yeah, right. I don't think so either, man. I hate to say it. But, yeah, I think he makes it interesting in certain points. I think he makes it interesting that fans are going to give him his props by saying he survived with Triple G if he does go through 12 rounds. Because, you know, Vonis is not some dude that you're just going to land one punch and it's done and over with, you know. He's definitely not going to be that heavyweight. What was his name that got in with Anthony Joshua? What's his name?
Parker.
Oh, God. No, the other guy. The guy that
Tom?
Had a title. He had a short reign.
Charles Martin.
Martin, right. Monterosa is no Martin. But all right, Brian. Hey, bro, thanks for calling in, man. I really appreciate it. We got to let you go because we got to get going ourselves here on Leaving the Ring.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks for having me on, and you guys have a good one.
You too, bro. You too. Here, real quick, final thoughts before we log off here on Leaving the Ring. First off, hey, I want to thank everybody that's tuned in and continue to support us on Patreon and continue to support us regardless. And, you know, I know, like I said, I haven't been around, but I appreciate all the emails and, you know, direct messages and the following that we have here. So final thoughts here. Salka, dude, burn those trunks. They weren't good for you. You shouldn't have done that. It was stupid, you know. Timber,
you know,
is the only thing I could have thought of when I saw you get dropped by Francisco Vargas. You know, understand your political view. Sometimes your political view should not be brought at a place where it has no business at. And that was definitely not on fight night on ESPN against Francisco Vargas. I had a guy that actually tweeted back to me, and I blocked him here, Gabriel. He said, because somebody had said he got it was well deserved what Rob Zalka got from Francisco Vargas. And this guy goes, well, it was deserved. And what about the smugglers and drug dealers? And so I had to respond back to the guy. And I'm like, what does that have to do with that? I mean, Francisco Vargas is not a smuggler and he's not a drug dealer. It's just a stupid point. You know, I mean, that had nothing to do. It's not like Vargas was trying to sneak over here to the States. He came here as a professional fighter to fight in a professional fight, not to overstay. So for him, for Salka to make that move by bringing a pair of trunks that said America First and have a wand printed on his trunks, to me was an open door to be criticized and ridiculed and to have people immediately applaud him getting stopped in the sixth round, not coming out after the sixth. So to me, there is no sympathy there. And, you know, I forgot, Michael Woodley, I don't want to, you know, I see the guy's tweets and I like some of his tweets, but he called them courageous. And me and you spoke about that. And it stood out that when I looked at that, I was like, courageous? How is this courageous? This is more like of a coward. And I think you even said that to me. You know, there's a coward going out there. You're bringing your agenda into the ring. So I thought it was a stupid move. And I think seeing some fighters
Now more than ever, it's actually safer to be an open racist. Well, I wouldn't say more than ever, but in our lifetime, I think, you know, me as an adult anyways, it seems like it's more okay. And the people are pushing back against people talking about racism more than ever. I mean, I guess, you know, he's pretty brave in a room full of Mexicans in Indio, California to wear those trunks. But yeah, it was, it just didn't help. What is it going to help? You know,
no.
I mean, think of all the mass shootings that we've had in the country this year. And not to, you know, do any whataboutism, but like, if something's really an issue to you, I mean, I would say that mass shootings seem to be more of an issue than people fleeing other countries and trying to get here, you know. And I don't know. Don't get me started. I mean, immigration people think the whole thing through. And, you know, they'll get mad because I'll start bringing in kind of the intersectionality of what the U.S. has done. You know, in South America, bringing down regimes, I mean, these are just things that they did. You know, what they're doing in the Middle East, invading Iraq based on lies in a war of choice. You know, it's people don't think, well, maybe, you know, we're causing the reasons why those people want to flee the places they're fleeing. But no, we need legal immigration. And, you know, I mean, just think about how
that's
this country was funded.
Right.
It
that's
just makes you sick.
That's an hour of another show that we could, obviously, we could really, honestly, we could do. You know?
And, you know,
I think that
check
means
out episode
myself
two
and you,
of,
we could,
of The Undiscovered Country, the podcast that I did. And I delve into it with an expert on immigration.
Right. And that was a great episode, by the way. Really, truly enjoyed it. And I know a lot of people did as well. You know, but, you know, my point was this, is that we're seeing more and more, especially in boxing, because Salka is not the first to bring up the wall and, you know, we're going to send Mexicans back and et cetera, et cetera. But it takes me back to a movie that I really, truly love and enjoy. It's a movie I can watch over and over, which is Sleepers. And there's a scene in the beginning of the movie where, well, right after the part of them being kids in juvenile hall, now they're adults and they walked into this pub slash
restaurant, and these two gentlemen are talking politics. And one of the guys said, hey, tell the bartender, hey, go over there and buy him a beer and tell him in this place here, Hell's Kitchen, partaking in talking politics and sports doesn't happen. Can't do it. And those guys respectively lifted up their glasses at them and said, hey, you're right. And I think that that's where we need to go back to when we talk in when we're in sports. You know, I don't want to see your political agenda stepping in the ring. Just get in there and do your job. And especially if you're being ignorant, but like I said, you're America first. Well, Francisco Vargas is not looking to cross over. He didn't come over illegally. He's not coming over to steal you. Well, he stole the, you know, I mean, he beat you up for the win, but he's not stealing it from you. And I think that's just stupid of some folks. And I got a lot of emails because of my tweets about it and some of my memes that I put up on Instagram, that some folks were kind of offended by it. And, you know, and I would say, hey, man, I'm sorry, you know, but I think it's got to go both ways.
America, you know? First, you know, if you can look up the history of America First. I think the Atlantic did a great piece on it. I'm pretty sure it's the Atlantic. I got the history of it. I won't, you know, we're trying to wrap up the show, but I would suggest people look that up. But it's just a weird thing to me. America, people that say America first, why does America not put itself first? You know, we've been like the right? superpower for like a long time. You know, our forefathers, the founders of the country, used to refer to Mexico and South America as our, you know, our backyard to the south. We've got like five or six, heading up to like maybe seven wars that we're doing that are undeclared, but are wars. You know, we do regime changes all the time. Like, when do we not put ourselves first? I don't understand.
Good point.
Well, I
no.
guess except
I know
when
I put myself first.
People.
I'm American. Right.
Yeah. But you know, we have a homeless problem and housing shortages, mm-hmm. and you know, Flint isn't the only major city with lead in it. I think there's like 13
right.
total that are in danger of this. Our infrastructure is all screwed up. But people that follow that America First stuff, you know, really need to take a look at it. People that are saying what they're actually doing. Puerto Rico still doesn't have power, but we're blowing money on bombs. You know, what about America
right.
First? Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
so anyway.
It's only right. Exactly. Anyways, man, it was good. I think that I was expecting a little bit more. Bring Russ with us, being back on the show here, doing Leaving in the Ring. But unfortunately, the only one that was having Ring Russ was my laptop, but not us. But anyways, we'll be back next week, everyone. I want to thank everybody that tuned in on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. People telling Gabriel, welcome back. Welcome back from where? You never left. You're still here. Anyways, the dark cloud, as always, brother. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. And keep a close lookout for me on America's Got Talent. I'll be in the background holding that sign that says, we love you, Samuel Cowell.
Peace.
Peace.
The crowd is electric. There's a real air of anticipation today. And here it comes, our midfield general, the new Hyundai Tucson Go Edition SUV. Proving that it's equipped to deal with anything. Packed with extra kit, including sat-nav with live traffic updates to help you stay on the ball, plus our ever-present 5-year unlimited mileage warranty to keep you match fit. But football fan or not, with Hyundai, you can all make the most of our World Cup Tucson Go Edition. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Warranty T's and C's apply.